writers like more than waxing lyrical about the process of writing. Luckily, there's nothing I like more than listening to other writers waxing their lyrics. So I thought it'd be interesting to combine the two and see what happens. Welcome to Bashing Keys. Today I'm talking to Gareth Quinn. He's a former local radio presenter and producer, and he's currently the incumbent contract writer at BBC Radio Comedy Department. His credits include The News Quiz, The Now Show, I guess that's why they call it The News, Lawrence and Gus, News Jack, Listen Against, Tilt, and he's currently putting together the next series of Recorded for Training Purposes. He also co-hosts a topical podcast called Boohoo, It's the News. Hello, Gareth Gwynn.
Hello, Simon.
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
Not bad. I've been working on a script today.
Is it going okay?
Not bad. I was saying to you just before we started recording that I was ready to send it off, and then as soon as someone said they wanted to see it, I had a bit of an attack of nerves and thought, no, actually.
Yeah, suddenly you see it in a totally different light.
Yeah, literally. I actually switched the lights on, which probably helped. I'm going to ask you the first question that I asked Paul the other day, actually,
okay.
Which is, do you actually feel like a writer, or do you feel like a fraud at a keyboard, like I do?
Yes, that's a good question. I think everyone feels like a fraud at a keyboard. You have moments when you're sitting there and going, oh, hang on a second, who am I trying to kid here? But do you know what? I've been working on a show recently called Recorded for Training Purposes, and the producer, Ed Morrish, asked us to have a look through all the scripts that had arrived on a non-com basis, which had just been sent in from the appeal that he put out on the BBC Writers' Room. So I think across a two-week period, I read somewhere in the region of 400 sketches.
Really?
Yeah, and you know, the quality was variable. It's that, you know, I saw everything. But I think doing that, it was one of those moments where there were a lot of scripts where I read and I went, right, that's a good idea. But what's wrong with this is, and I was able to sort of go, now all you need to do is tweak this or end it there or do these sort of nips and tucks and suggest these alterations to sketches. And I think that's the point where I realised that at least since I'd first sat down and started doing this, I had improved in some way.
Do you find, though, it's easier to script edit other people's work ahead of your own?
Ahead of your own, yes. It is that fresh pair of eyes thing.
Yeah.
And you know that's true from when you've written something and you maybe have sent it into something and it's been batted back and you've gone, I really like that idea. I wonder why that was batted back. And then you read it 6 months down the line and I can see exactly why that didn't work. It's twice as long and too racist. It's just there's something wrong with it. But yeah, it's that sort of thing where when you've got that little bit of distance, you can go back to it and then you can script edit because it feels like it's been written by someone else.
In an ideal world, you would leave 6 months between the first and second draft of everything.
That would be ideal. So I wrote a sketch, I edited it about 6 months later, and I only saw it performed about 2 weeks ago. And what was peculiar about it was I hadn't read the sketch before it was performed that evening, and there were lines in it I'd forgotten I'd written. And most of the time when you watch your own material performed, I find it quite difficult to laugh at something I've written because you know what's coming. But it was very peculiar because there were lines in it I had genuinely forgotten written, and a couple of them took me a bit by surprise. So that was quite encouraging, I suppose.
Yeah, that's nice. What I found when I first started writing on Smack the Pony, the performers were so good. They would take what I didn't even realise were jokes
and turn them into jokes.
Yeah, just through sheer brilliant performances, just turn what was a one-joke sketch, really, into quite a sustained, funny piece. And that's really encouraging.
Yeah, it is very. There's some shows where you have your little read-throughs halfway through, or even if you sit there and sort of run them through in your head, and you've got bits where you go, I think that's a lot delivered well. That'll work. And then you see it and you go, yeah, that's exactly how I wanted it to be, and that sort of thing.
The other side of it is when they hit everything you've written word for word as well. It's quite rare, I think, but to literally see or hear what you've written, that's quite fun.
Absolutely, that's really exciting when you see exactly the words that you have written down, and how they interpret them is always really peculiar. And just things like the emphasis on a word or a phrase isn't how it is in your head. But there's sometimes where you're listening to shows or in a recording or seeing something and there's been a change, and there's always that thing of, oh, that's why did you change that bit? By this point, you've zoned out of the recording and now you're just in your own head trying to rattle through what possible reason they could have made that change for.
Do you think ultimately that means you want to direct?
Do you know what? Well, I used to be a producer because I was a producer at Radio Wales and XFM for a while. And I think maybe it's that bit of my head. But no, actually, no, I don't think that's the reason. I think it's because I've written something down and someone said it differently and I want to know why. I don't think that's to anything to do with being a producer at all. But maybe there's a little bit of that still hanging around.
But would ultimately you like to produce your own?
Do you know what? So to be able to dart from one to the other would be fantastic.
You wouldn't be keen to produce your own necessarily.
I think that would be too difficult. I think you need someone to come in at that stage and to have that slight distance from it. I think, you know, I have written and produced my own things because when I was at student radio, there was no one else who was going to do it for me. I had to do it myself. And the thing is with student radio, and as well, my first time I was in commercial radio, I was just left in the studio by myself, and you're doing it all yourself. So, and what that does is that gives you the skills to do it all. So you learn how to edit and you learn how to produce and you learn how to write and you learn how to perform. So you've got the whole gamut, but you are well aware that it would be nice if you could just concentrate on the writing and have someone else look after making sure it sounds pretty. I mean, I really enjoy doing all the different bits. Writing is my favourite of all the different bits, but there is something quite nice about just masterminding a project and putting it all together. And I quite like editing as well, which is...
Yeah, I do too, actually.
Yeah.
I did a show for Resonance FM. That was quite fun, sitting with an editor who had no vested interest in the material whatsoever.
And just shouting, like, that bit there.
Yeah, and kind of taking an idea and creating his own sound for it and kind of really lifting the joke.
I do an occasional podcast with John Luke Roberts, and with that, we write it together, we record it together, and then Luke heads off and I have to sit and edit it. And that's always a very odd thing, because this thing has been a proper, we've done it all together right from the off. But then, you know, when I'm sitting there and editing it, I have to make the call about, oh, maybe we get rid of that bit, or maybe we leave that, or I change it. And those sorts of decisions come into play. But it's one of those things where if you hadn't written it and you hadn't been in through all that process, I think you'd make a different call to if you'd just heard the performance and then needed to chop it down.
It's very odd to become very dispassionate at that stage, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think that goes back to that idea of going back to a sketch that you may have written 6 months ago and are editing, because there are those moments where you've written it and you think this is great. And, you know, for it to be rejected at that point makes you very cross, but when you read it in 6 months, you go, no, I see exactly why they've rejected it. Yeah. And you can view it with that slight distance, and that's always a big help.
So let's have you take us through the journey from XFM to where you are now, which is the writer's bursary.
Yes.
At BBC Radio. We talked to Paul about his stint there. So if you just take us from XFM to...
XFM was in 2007. There was a Welsh XFM for 6 months. I should clarify in case people thought I was at the London one. XFM had been in London for 10 years and then they opened Manchester, Scotland and South Wales. And I worked as breakfast show producer at XFM South Wales. By the time that launched, I'd worked... Prior to this, I'd done student radio. I'd been a BA at BBC Radio Wales. So I'd done those bits. But also, I'd, by that point, already started writing for the radio comedy department in the BBC. I'd entered a BBC talent competition, which you had to submit a little audio demo and then a script. And I went through all the rounds and I got a pilot on Radio 7, which had led to little bits of writing sketches for various people here and there on Radio 4 and on Radio 7. So when XFM started, I was leading this sort of bizarre double life where I was producing a breakfast show and then going home and writing sketches for Radio 4 and right. For Radio 7 in the afternoon and evening. So there was a topical show Radio 7 did called Tilt for a while, where I was literally getting up at 4 in the morning, going into work at 5, working till 1, coming home, sitting at the computer, and then just writing from about 3 till 5 or 6 in the evening.
So was all your writing caffeine-fueled?
I think I put on a stone in the 6 week period that Tilt ran. It was dreadful. It was possibly the worst for my health. It was appalling. For my career, it was probably very useful because what had happened was, and it was all very unfortunate, but for various reasons, there was change management very high up in the company that owned XFM, and we'd only been open 3 months when they announced that it was looking like they were going to have to sell XFM South Wales and the other regional XFM stations and just basically concentrate on London. So during my time at XFM, there was this very unusual period. We were actually under threat of closure longer than we were just open normally. I think we were closed after 6 months and 1 day. So it was one of these things where while I was working on XFM, you know, it was common sense to be constantly looking for what you could possibly do next. And writing, because it was something that I'd already been doing for about a year, was something where I was like, I was just trying to get as much as I could on pretty much everything, because I realised that would be a very useful thing to do. Mm. When XFM did close in May, I went back to BBC Radio Wales, where I'd been a broadcast assistant. I went back there as a researcher for a bit, still scribbling away in the evenings, writing for anyone and everyone. But I ended up working with Rod Gilbert, which was very exciting because he has a Radio Wales Saturday morning show, and I produced that, first of all, as a stand-in, and then he had a panel game coming up, and they asked me if I'd like to produce that. So that was quite nice as well, because that was something I hadn't done. I'd done in studio producing for music shows, but then to produce a panel game was something completely different. And then still scribbling away and scribbling away and trying to just get as much on the radio as I possibly could, because all my time at Radio Wales, they just kept extending and extending, going, right, and this will be it. Once you finish this run of shows, that'll be it. You'll have to leave. And then it will be extended again. And then actually the Ross Brand thing was actually quite handy for me, because all these extra rules about compliance meaning they needed a little bit more of an all hands on deck attitude. So at a point where I'd been told, you will definitely, definitely, definitely need to leave the building at this date, suddenly they went, we could really do with another producer to just listen to things for about 3 months. So I had it extended again. And this kept happening and kept happening and kept happening until I was invited to apply for the radio bursary, which I got. And then I think I had to turn it around. I produced my last radio show for Radio Wales on, I think, the Monday. And I started in the radio comedy department on the Wednesday or something like that.
So what does the actual bursary entail?
The bursary, it's basically being on call as a writer. First of all, they employ two people.
Had you met Luke at this point?
Do you know what? We'd met once in a meeting for a show that was to become Newsjack, because they'd got people who'd done similar shows in the past and got them together in a room to just brainstorm ideas for what this new show could be. And that was the first time we'd actually met, and we'd heard of each other before. And that was the first time we actually spoke properly. But yeah, it was literally that. It was one sort of 20-minute meeting in a pub around the corner from the radio entertainment department. And then next thing you know, we were being asked to share a very, very small office together. And we are there for whatever shows are on the go. The producer can just open the door and say, quick, we need jokes about, or we need sketches for, and then we just fill in the blanks basically and just scribble away and do what's required. Because of the nature of the shows the department produces, the topical programmes are the ones that take up quite a bit of our time, just because they completely swallow material. Yeah. So the news quiz, the Now Show, I guess that's why they're called the news, Newsjack. When they're on the go, they will take normally about 2 days of our time. We're contracted to be there for 4 days in the week, so that normally leaves 2 days for other bits and bobs they've got going on for us.
And has having a full-time writing job, as opposed to scribbling away at night, changed the way you write?
Yes, it definitely does.
Does it make you more disciplined?
I think the fact that you've got to be in at 10 and leave at 6 makes you more disciplined. I know that Luke beforehand pretty much wrote everything he'd ever written in a coffee shop, so this idea of having an office was, I think, slightly alien to him. There's also the thing about the times of day when people like to work, and I was always aware there were periods in the day where I would be slightly more prolific than others.
Yeah, me too.
When are you more prolific? You're going to say like 3 in the morning, aren't you?
It's ridiculous. It is between sort of 11 at night and 3 in the morning.
I reckon that is something to do with when it's the day and you're awake, you're properly awake and you're writing, your self-critical faculty is a little bit more active and is going, no, you can't say that, no, that's, you know, whereas when you're sleepy, there's much more this attitude of just get it down on the page.
Robert Rodriguez says that he finds the best time is to literally the moment you wake up, turn on the laptop, start writing. Don't get out of bed, don't have a coffee, nothing.
Yeah.
Do it for an hour, shut down, go back to sleep.
Yeah, I used to do that for exam revision, and I think a lot of the time when I'm writing, I get back into that frame of mind. I'm well aware sometimes that I get back into that sort of, right, this is a job that needs to be done, so let's cram in the hours where I can. With the job we're doing at the moment, when you've got a brief, I think it is slightly different. When you've got a brief and then sometimes deadlines the same day, it's obviously very different.
Does it play into the same point, though, in the sense that because you have to produce a certain amount of material by a certain time, you do switch off your critical faculties in a different way? Again, Robert Rodriguez read a study that they gave a pottery class 2 separate assignments and divided them into 2 groups. Told one group that they would get a pass if they made 1 good pot.
Mm-hmm.
And they told the other group they'd get a pass only if they made a certain number of pots.
Right.
But they didn't say what that number was.
Yeah.
And what happened was the group that had to make 1 pot spent their whole time making 1 pot and trying to make it perfect.
Yeah.
Whereas the other group just churned out pots. Just pot after pot after pot after pot. And they made more A-grade pots than the people doing just the one pot.
Yes, I can see exactly how that works. With the news quiz, we get together in the morning and decide on the topics, and we have a meeting at lunchtime to go through, because we normally there's six topics in a day. We try to get the questions sorted in groups of threes, basically. So in the morning there'll be three questions, and three of the writers will take a question each, and then two of them will just work across all three. But the key thing is you've got then a 2.5-3 hour period in which you need to write either a load of jokes about one topic or a load of jokes about three. And there is this thing about you'll sit there for a bit. You'll read the story, you'll get it into your head, and you'll normally write one or two jokes. And then as the deadline approaches, suddenly you're sort of writing more and more and more and more. And the number you write becomes exponential. The closer the deadline comes, this is certainly what I find, you're coming up with more and more and more and more.
Well, because each idea is feeding each idea, of course.
Yes, it does. And you do get that thing where a lot of jokes, particularly in something like the News Quiz or the Now Show, they are based on a quote from someone, and so you write that down, and almost as you're typing it down, it's like you're typing the feed line, and then suddenly you think of several punchlines for it, and it's that sort of thing, and so it starts to roll. I always find that the best jokes I write are normally the first one and the last sort of three. It's not always true. There's normally ones you're quite fond of in the middle as well, but there is that thing where it's often the very last ones you come up with are the best, but you've got to plough through two sides of average ones.
Do you then submit all of those, or do you start to edit yourself and say, right, well, there's no point in handing those through? Or...
The way it works is that the writers have a meeting where we read out each other's jokes.
You don't read your own?
You don't read your own. Okay. You read out someone else's, so, you know, you can't even try and gurn your way through with great delivery. And it's really interesting in those meetings, because people are listening really carefully. And the first time you write for the News Quiz, they don't actually put your jokes through this process, which at the time I thought was unfair, but I now realize is just kind, because they are picked apart, as in, you know, they'll read sort of three, and then, you know, you'll get to the third and someone will literally go, do you need the word of in that? And it's a lot of jokes, a lot of sketches as well, but with jokes it's particularly, especially one-liners, it's all about word economy. You just need to deliver the information in the joke in the least number of words possible. I mean, sometimes they rely on a quirky turn of phrase, and that's great, but normally if it's set up punchline, you want the shortest possible setup, and you want the punchline that'll give you the greatest effect, and that's just by normally just crunching it right down, which is what those meetings are
Is it quite laughter free as well?
Those meetings, they are quite interesting actually, because sometimes there's a lot of laughter in the room, and then sometimes they're read sort of just really carefully. I think the fact of the matter is that it's also people are listening so carefully to the way that everything is phrased, and they get a sort of a knowing nod, a sort of reassuring nod.
Yeah.
But after a while you realise that's just as good, that's fine. As long as when they're read out in front of an audience, the audience laughs, then they've worked.
Did you find you'd get into conversations about what is a funnier biscuit? I've been in rooms where 5 minutes have been spent going, well, no, clubs aren't as funny as Bourbons. Garibaldi's are hilarious, but Jaffa Cakes, they're not so funny.
Yeah.
It gets that anal.
Yeah, you get things like that. A lot of the time, you can end up writing jokes, particularly when you're doing topical comedy. You seem to end up with jokes where, essentially, you just need to get the reference at the end right. And it's this thing as, if it's something old, then it's as old as. And then you have to pick. So, okay, which celebrity is being old this week? Who's a good... It's that sort of thing. And it's one of those sort of weird things where there's these sets of names that are interchangeable. I mean, the fact of the matter, by the time you've got to that point, hopefully you've had those moments already in your own head of what's the funniest biscuit. But sometimes someone will go, hang on a second, wouldn't that be funnier? And very often it is.
Is that deceptive, though? Is it because it's just fresh and it hasn't occurred to you? Because obviously the biggest part of laughter is the shock value of it.
Sometimes if you hand in a script, a sketch or something, and someone will go, did you think about doing this? There are occasions when you can go, yes, I did, and I didn't think it worked as well. But equivalently, very often you'll go, no. And I think if you've been struggling with something and then somebody does go, did you think about this? You will know the moment they say it. You go, oh, God, yeah, of course. Of course, that was how it was meant to be done. To be honest, that seems to happen quite a lot. You sort of sit there and struggle and struggle and struggle. And it's that fresh pair of eyes thing. It's someone coming at it from, particularly with a sketch, coming at it from the outside and just going, do you realise you've been sitting on a punchline there that you haven't actually used?
Coming on to Newsjack, you obviously were taking a slightly different tack from that.
Because Newsjack, the speed at which you turn it around is the real challenge there. By the time we'd have the first meeting, which would get this right, on the Tuesday morning, by which point someone had worked their way through all, or at least most of, the scripts that had arrived on the Monday.
Because it was Open Door, of course.
That's it, it was Open Door. And he got a sense of what had been covered well by the pile of material and what had been missed. And as well, there's an inevitable problem for an Oncom show. The deadline obviously has to be on the sort of Monday lunchtime. I think I can't quite remember the dates and times, but there's obviously a deadline for material at one point. But between the deadline for material and the show being recorded, news can still happen. So a lot of the time it was filling in those gaps. But there was a script editing role in the sense that you would get scripts that would come in and go, this is nearly there, but it needs these tweaks.
So you weren't sending it back to the writer. You were literally doing the rewrites yourself at this point.
That's the difference between recorded for training purposes and newsjack, because recorded for training purposes isn't topical. The call for material is months before the show actually comes out. With recorded for training purposes, they can look at the script, they can suggest the changes, and then email it back, and hopefully get a script that's a little bit closer to what's right for the show. With Newsjack, I think sometimes they could get them back, I'm not entirely certain, but a lot of the time it was just sort of, right, we need to turn this around very quickly.
Paul's talking about the importance of the Open Door show and how almost every writer you talk to will have at some point written for an Open Door show, and that would have been possibly their first check.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite obvious that they're really important and they're a very good way to get started. What's odd is, for myself, when I was getting going, there wasn't really an Open Door show to contribute to. I came in through a different scheme. I'd done topical comedy writing for commercial radio on a station called Bridge FM, and then working on XFM, obviously we were reading the papers that day and sort of scribbling down ideas for what we would then do on the show. But the way that I got into the radio comedy department was through a competition called Witty and Twisted, where they asked for a little demo, and basically you got the chance to make a pilot. Recorded for Training Purposes was starting around the same time, I think, almost as part of the same scheme. But yeah, they're incredibly important.
So it's really important to send stuff in, even if you don't think it's going to get read, it is going to get read. And if it's good, it will stand out.
For something like Recorded for Training Purposes and Newsjack, yes, it'll get read. And it's just that sort of vote of confidence when a script actually gets on air and you go, yes, there we are, I thought I could do it. And that's it, there it is, it's just gone out. And there is this thing of, you know, if you're good and you're consistent and, you know, your name is popping up regularly, then your name will get noticed. The thing is that I think at every level, there's always that thing of, well, how do I get onto the next level? So you're working on Open Door shows and you go, well, how do I move on to the next level? And how do I move on to the next level? And it is that thing of just persistence, I think. It's just keep plowing away. But yeah, there are opportunities that come up from shows like that. They're a really good way to get your material read out and noticed.
So do you find that with all the sort of emphasis and workload going on to all these different shows, are you finding time for your own projects?
Yes. One of the good things about the way the bursary works is obviously you are in the department. So it's just nice to have people you can bounce ideas off and go, oh, I've got this idea for a show and it's this and it, you know, and just sort of thrash it around there. And you've got people who can immediately tell you, yes, that sounds like a good idea, or no, that sounds like a dreadful idea.
Yeah. Don't waste your time on it.
Yeah, exactly. It is really good to be told, no, that's a bad idea. And this is something that a lot of writers have mentioned to me, is that all they want sometimes is for someone to turn around and go, do you know what, this isn't right. Because the number of people you hear have had things dribbling away for a very long time and have done rewrite after rewrite after rewrite. And I've heard three separate people now have said to me, wouldn't it be nice if they just turned around and went, do you know what, this isn't for us, can you work on something different?
It's much more constructive, isn't it, to be told it's not working.
Yeah, and it's not working and here's why this idea won't.
And here's why I don't think it could ever work as well. That's a key phrase.
That would be quite useful. But yes, in the situation we're in now, yeah, there's opportunity to... It's really the fact that if you have an idea, you know, there's people there you can talk to about it. There's people there who can help you with it.
So is that the next step for you after the bursary's finished?
I think after the bursary's finished, it's frankly a terrifying thought at the moment. Yes, I guess it is to try and get sort of your own project off the ground. But I think it's one of these things where you just sort of want to hang on in there. It goes back to what you were saying at the start about the idea of, do you think you're just pretending? I guess the answer to that is, I think I've just managed to convince myself that I'm not just pretending to be a writer, that I am a writer, and I'd quite like to stick around doing this for a while. But it's just hanging on in there seems to be at the moment the main goal.
Thank you very much for your time, Gareth. It was all really interesting and really insightful, and hopefully we'll have you back.
Thank you very much.